Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 18th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Did water disposal wells cause quake?" RRC investigation underway on the cause of 5.1 magnitude temblor in Martin County. By Trevor Hawes, editorial director. The Railroad Commission is investigating whether a large earthquake that shook West Texas Monday night was caused by produced water disposal wells. The RRC has been in contact with operators and sent inspectors to the area as part of our efforts to reduce seismicity possibly caused by underwater injection of produced water into disposal wells. Produced water is water that comes out from wells during oil and gas production, the state oil and gas regulator told the Reporter Telegram in a statement Tuesday. The RRC will then evaluate next steps that could potentially be taken to mitigate earthquakes to protect residents. The TexNet Seismic Monitoring Program, which reports data to the U.S. Geological Survey, said in a news release that Monday's 5.1 magnitude temblor happened at 7:50 p.m., about 30 miles north of Midland in Martin County. The process of better understanding the earthquake continues. "We are still investigating the data associated with this seismic event," said Mark Schuster, interim director of the Bureau of Economic Geology, which manages TexNet. "Our first concern, of course, is for any people who might have been affected by this earthquake. This is the second earthquake at or above a 5.0 magnitude in West Texas this year, and it's the sixth since 2020. On July 26th, a 5.1 magnitude quake rattled the state on the Scurry-Fisher County line. 3 days later, the RRC shut in two disposal wells. As of 4 p.m. Tuesday, USGS had recorded 19 earthquakes of all magnitudes in the immediate area of Monday's event over the past 24 hours, three of which were at 2.0 or above. None reached 3.0 or above. 28 earthquakes have been recorded in this area over the past 7 days. The City of Midland, Midland County, and Midland ISD did not report any damage to its properties. Commenters on the Reporter Telegram's Facebook page reported sloshing water in pools, cracked concrete in driveways, and being shaken awake in bed. People across Texas reported feeling Monday's earthquake, and according to information submitted to USGS, it was felt as far away as Iron River, Michigan, about 1,190 miles away. This article is entitled, "DPS Trooper Struck by Vehicle While Investigating Crash," by the Midland Reporter Telegram. Ector County. A Texas Department of Public Safety trooper was struck by a vehicle while outside of his patrol vehicle. The trooper, according to a statement from DPS, was struck around 9 a.m. Tuesday while he was investigating a crash along State Highway 302 near mile marker 246 in Ector County. The trooper suffered serious injuries and was transported to Medical Center Hospital in Odessa before being airlifted to a Lubbock area hospital, said the press statement by DPS officials. At this time, the trooper remains in serious but stable condition. An investigation into the incident is ongoing, and no additional information was available. This article is entitled, "MAF Sets Record for Annual Boardings," by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Midland International Air and Spaceport will set a record for annual boardings this fiscal year, but the final tally is a month away. So far, MAS has seen 679,622 passengers over 11 months, besting the previous annual record of 661,882 in 2022-23, according to the City of Midland. Overall boardings in August totaled 63,704. Airline activity. In looking at airline passenger data for August, all airlines saw month-over-month declines. Southwest Airlines recorded 28,161 passengers, down 14.92%. American Airlines, operating as American Eagle, saw 18,040 boardings, a slight decrease of 1.64%. United Airlines customers fell by 4.13% to 13,911. Delta Airlines tallied 3,592 enplanements, declining 16.33%. Southwest shuttles passengers to five destinations out of MAF: Austin Bergstrom International, Hobby Airport in Houston, Love Field in Dallas, Denver International, and Harry Reid International in Las Vegas. American flies to Dallas-Fort Worth International and Phoenix Sky Harbor. United connects to Bush Intercontinental in Houston and Denver International. Delta carries passengers to Austin Bergstrom. Parking and fuel at MAF. In August, the airport collected $697,928 in parking revenue, a month-over-month decrease of 13.54%, but higher than in 2023, which totaled $631,312. Fiscal year-to-date, the airport has collected $7,551,318. Fuel sales tallied 699,579 gallons, pushing the fiscal year-to-date figure to 7,543,740 gallons. This article is entitled, Midland ISD Addresses Broad Social Media Threat to Schools, by B. K. Richter, staff writer. A message announcing that local law enforcement is aware of a social media post circulating warning of a broad threat to schools is not uncommon for school districts. On September 9th, the district responded by alerting parents to a broad social media threat that mentioned schools in the 432 area code. However, there was no specific threat made to an MISD campus or the district. I would say that we take every threat seriously, MISD Police Chief Scott McCown told the Reporter-Telegram. And since last Monday, we have received several dozens of threats that we have looked into. McCown said that if someone finds a threat, the best way to submit a tip anonymously is through the school district's Anonymous Alerts tip line. Many times, when the threat is reposted, then they are warning the people that we are looking into them, McCown said. Some of the threats last week were traced out of the country or even within other states. They were not local. For parents and students who believe they have located a threat, McCown also recommended sending information to Midland Crime Stoppers. Residents are encouraged to call 694-TIPS, use the mobile app P3 Tips, or visit 694TIPS.com. With the anonymous tip software that students and parents can access and report, we get those tips immediately, McCown said, and the investigation moves just as quickly. The biggest issue is with reposting the threat, and what we have seen here over the last week and a half is the same threat over the last week and a half. McCown said the biggest priority for his department is to keep students safe. However, parents should always inform local law enforcement of potential issues. Keep us informed, he said. Another MISD tool is the Standard Response Protocol, which lays out the appropriate action to take in response to a threat. The standard response protocol has been recommended by the Texas School Safety Center, the organization tasked with supporting key school safety initiatives and mandates for the state of Texas and the governor's Homeland Security Strategic Plan, the district said in a statement. In addition to adopting the standard response protocol, Midland ISD trains staff in the Civilian Response to Active Shooter Events Protocol, CRAZE. CRAZE is designed and built on the Avoid, Deny, and Defend ADD strategy developed by ALERT in 2004. What we have done in the past is send direct messaging to parents for specific campuses, said MISD communication specialist Sam Eaton. With every response, there is a campus notification along with a threshold that we are required to send. There haven't been any lockdowns at MISD during this 2024-25 school year. Over at Ector County ISD, Nimitz Middle School was placed in lockdown status September 13th after a student reported during lunch that there was a person with a gun on campus. The incident ultimately was investigated as a hoax, and the student was arrested. This article is entitled New Homes on Horizon. Planning and Zoning Approves Plats for Midland Habitat Project, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Midland Habitat for Humanity's Benton Street development was taken up at Monday's Planning and Zoning Commission hearing. Commissioners reinstated an approved preliminary plat of Habitat's Nueva La Jolla addition, a replat of 9 lots at Benton Street and Orchard Lane. Commissioners also approved a residential replat of 8 lots and an adjacent 0.05-acre portion of vacated street right-of-way at Mulberry Lane and North Clay Street. Habitat seeks to replat 8 lots south of Mulberry Lane into 11 lots to develop single-family dwellings. The preliminary plat received approval in April 2022. City Council will determine final approval on Monday's item at a future meeting. According to Jeff Myers, Chief of Staff at Midland Habitat, Benton Street is expected to have 22 homes, and, with final approval, the walls should be raised on the first home later this month. This article is entitled P&Z OK's Preliminary Plat for Hillcrest Acres Development, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. After extended discussion and comments from residents, the Planning and Zoning Commission approved a preliminary plat of 19.67 acres at Princeton Avenue and Midland Drive. Midland Community Development Corporation is planning to develop Hillcrest Acres on the acreage and has requested to replat the 19.67 acres into 90 lots for future single-family and townhouse development. Residents Christina Cockwell and Sharon Humphreys spoke at the public hearing to express concerns about both the current amount of traffic and how it would grow once the 90 homes were built. Planning and Zoning Commissioner John Burkholder asked about a traffic study for that area. He asked if new traffic lights were planned for the area and if existing traffic lights would be adjusted to account for traffic changes after the homes were built. Development Officer Elizabeth Triggs told commissioners the plat is in alignment with the zone change done in 2020 when it was changed to PD, Planned District, and gave the lots a certain size. Commissioner Brennan Berry pointed out to the two neighbors at the hearing, and other residents not present but concerned about the development, that this is only a preliminary plat, and a final plat will have to be considered and approved by city staff, the Planning and Zoning Commission, and finally, City Council. This article is entitled What Voters Should Know About Texas Gun Laws, by Kevin Krause from the Dallas Morning News. Texas has few restrictions on firearms. It also has seen deadly mass shootings at churches, malls, schools, and in downtown Dallas in 2016, where a gunman killed five police officers. Texas is the top source of U.S. guns trafficked into Mexico to arm the drug cartels. And Texas guns also find their way into the hands of criminals across the U.S., authorities say. The state is ranked 27th in the U.S. for gun-related deaths. Guns killed more than 4,600 Texans in 2022 in connection with homicides, suicides, and accidents, according to the most recent federal health data. Here's what you need to know about gun laws, including recent developments and which elections to watch. Who are the key elected officials who impact gun policy? The President and Congress. Congress makes laws concerning federal gun regulations that apply nationwide, while state legislatures are free to pass their own restrictions or gun rights protections. The President helps set the agenda on gun control or gun rights and signs new bills into law. Courts. Federal courts, federal appeals courts, and the Supreme Court decide whether laws and executive orders related to firearms conform with the Constitution. The President nominates new judges, and the U.S. Senate confirms them. State legislature. The Texas legislature decides whether to expand gun regulations or gun rights in this state. Many states have passed their own gun control measures in recent years after Congress failed to act on calls for reform. At least 15 states and the District of Columbia have their own bump stock bans. And at least 21 states and the District of Columbia have some form of red flag laws, which allow judges to temporarily take firearms from people deemed dangerous. Texas has neither law on the books. What decisions have been made that have had an impact? President Joe Biden in 2022 signed the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, the most significant gun control legislation in years. The federal law makes it easier to prosecute gun trafficking crimes. The law also enhanced background checks for gun buyers under 21 and made it illegal for those with misdemeanor domestic violence convictions to own guns. On Biden's orders, ATF issued a rule earlier this year that is intended to increase background checks for gun sales between private parties. And Biden, in September 2023, created the White House's Office of Gun Violence Prevention in an effort to end the nation's gun violence epidemic. The Texas legislature passed a permitless carry law that took effect in September 2021, allowing gun owners to carry their weapons without a license. The law applies to those who are not otherwise prohibited from carrying a handgun. Previously, Texans had to pass a background check, take a safety course, and demonstrate firearms proficiency to obtain a license to carry a handgun in public. What races should I pay attention to in this election? President. The President can issue executive orders affecting gun regulation, but such actions often lead to legal challenges that ultimately are decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. Biden, for example, has issued orders limiting the availability of certain weapons like untraceable, quote, ghost guns, unquote, and adding restrictions to firearm accessories like stabilizing braces. U.S. Senate. Democrats hold a 51-49 majority in the Senate, so every Senate race could have an impact on the balance of power and affect gun laws. In Texas, Senator Ted Cruz is opposed by Democrat Colin Allred, who has voted for gun control legislation. Cruz is a strong supporter of gun rights and opposes most gun restrictions. U.S. House. Republicans hold a slim majority in the U.S. House, 217 to 213. Each race is important in determining which party controls the House. There are 9 races in North Texas that could impact this calculation and determine what gun laws have a chance of passing. The Republicans' 2024 platform defends the right to keep and bear arms. The Democrats' National Party platform supports universal background checks, safe storage requirements, and a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Texas State Legislature. Republicans have held the majority in the Texas House and Senate for 2 decades, making it unlikely that any state gun regulations will pass. This is the Life Tributes column. Janelle Burnett, December 16, 1934 to September 12, 2024. Janelle Burnett, a beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, passed away peacefully in Midland on September 12th at the age of 89. Born in Tishomingo, Mississippi on December 16, 1934, Janelle was a pillar of strength and support for her family. Janelle is survived by her children, David Burnett and his wife, Jana, Johnny Burnett and his wife, Teresa, and Lisa Kane and her husband, Sean. Additionally, she was also blessed with 3 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. Janelle's ashes will be interred at the family plot in Rienzi, Mississippi. A memorial service will be held on Thursday, September 19th at 2 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Everyone is welcome to attend. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Vernon D. Stokes, January 1, 1939 to September 14, 2024. Vernon D. Stokes, 85 of Midland, entered the presence of his Savior and was reunited with his daughters on September 14, 2024. He was born on January 1, 1939 in Arch, New Mexico, to Scott Smith Stokes and Alma Rachel Copeland Stokes. While at Wayland Baptist College, he met and married the love of his life, Belva Ramsey, on November 1, 1958. They welcomed their daughter Shelley on their first wedding anniversary, and over the next 9 years added Shane, Shauna, and Shannon. Vernon is survived by Belva, his wife of almost 66 years, his sons Shane, Kim Stokes, Shannon, Kimberly Stokes, sons-in-law Eric, Cole, Kelly, and Brian Sanderson, Kim, 15 grandchildren, and 11 great-grandchildren, as well as 4 sisters. He is preceded in death by his parents, his daughters Shelley Stokes Call and Shanna Stokes Sanderson, and 1 great-granddaughter. There will be a memorial service in the Worship Center at First Baptist Church at 1:30 p.m. on Friday, September 20th. There will be a visitation at the home of Shane and Kim Stokes on Thursday, September 19th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at 1424 Lanham. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts can be given to the First Baptist Church Ezekiel Department Benevolence Fund, InStep Ministry, or the Stokes Endowed Scholarships at Wayland Baptist University. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Carl Lee Van Cleve, July 3, 1952 to September 12, 2024. Carl Lee Van Cleve, 72 of Midland, passed away on Thursday, September 12th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, September 19th at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Funeral service will be at 10 a.m. Friday, September 20th at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Carl was born on July 3, 1952, in Graham, Texas, to Pat and Harley Van Cleve. After the family moved to Midland, he attended school, graduating from Lee High School, and he married Lanita Burge, and they had one child, Carla. He then married Christine Franklin, and they had two children, Nicholas and Andrew. Carl is survived by his wife, Christine Van Cleve, daughter Carla Williams, Jason, son Nick Van Cleve, Amber, son Andrew Van Cleve, as well as six grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. He is also survived by his brother Ricky Van Cleve, Deborah, and sister Sherry Howell, sister-in-law Joyce Boren, Dawn, sister-in-law Nancy Pendleton, Danny, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. Carl is preceded in death by father Harley Van Cleve, mother Pat Van Cleve, stepfather Kim Lewis, brother-in-law Glenn Howell, and sister-in-law Doris Van Cleve. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lona Sharon Carter. Lona Sharon Carter, 74, of Odessa, passed from this life on September 14th in Odessa. A viewing will be held on Thursday, September 19th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Friday, September 20th at 3 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home with Pastor Chris Hager officiating. Jose Pablo Sanchez. Jose Pablo Sanchez, 73, passed away on Friday, September 13th. Viewing was held on Tuesday, September 17th from 1 to 9 p.m. with a rosary to begin at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Wednesday, September 18th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements have been entrusted to Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
School shooting threat investigated. An unsubstantiated threat to schools in the 432 area code was reported to Monahans Wicked Paiute ISD officials on Monday. A Snapchat post was circulating about somebody making a threat to shoot the schools with 432 area code. The Kermit School District received notice of the threat on Friday. MWP ISD Superintendent Chad Smith said, quote, "There was circulation around West Texas of a possible school shooting somewhere in the 432 area code. DPS and other law enforcement entities reached out to school districts and informed them that it is an unfounded threat on social media. As always, we will remain vigilant, as school safety is our number one priority. If you see law enforcement throughout our district today, September 10th, it just so happens that we had scheduled them to tour and walk our campuses today. However, this was scheduled well in advance and has nothing to do with the unsubstantiated threat." End quote. The public is asked to stay vigilant and report any hint of a school threat to Monahans Police Department at 943-3254 or the Ward County Sheriff's Department at 943-6703. Council sets tax rate, approves budget. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A tax increase and the budget for the upcoming fiscal year were both approved when the Monahan City Council met in regular session on Tuesday afternoon. Although the ad valorem tax rate remains the same as the current year at 35 cents per $100, an increase in property values will increase the overall property tax collected. City Manager Rex Thies said, quote, "Even though the city is not increasing the rate, the higher property values will mean the city will collect $160,519, or 7.4% more in tax revenue than last year, which constitutes a tax increase by state statute." End quote. The assessed valuation, according to the published budget, is $594 million, up from $513 million last year. The tax rate will produce an additional tax levy of $2.07 million. Prior to the unanimous vote by the council, there were no comments in the public hearing for comments regarding the proposed property tax increase. Councilmen present were Calvin Carroll, Richard Hawkins, Jeppy Wilson, Gerald Stava, and Ivy Valenzuela. Mayor Adam Steen was also present. City Attorney Justin Till was absent. In second readings, the council adopted the budget for the fiscal year of October 1, 2024 to September 31, 2025. The total budget is $16,708,000. For the general fund budgeted revenue, of which $2.2 million is derived from ad valorem tax, is $9,105,000. The system fund revenue, primarily from sanitation, water, and sewer billings, is $7.6 million. Expected expenditures for the general fund are $8.8 million. The largest budgeted expenditures are salaries, $4.7 million, contractual, $810,000, maintenance structures, $964,000, maintenance equipment, $324,000, capital outlay, $464,000, and capital equipment, $635,000. Budgeted expenditures for the system fund were stated at $7.2 million. The largest budgeted expenditures are water and wastewater disposal, $827,000, and solid waste collection and disposal, $1.6 million. Two public hearings were held to allow residents an opportunity to have input on the property tax increase. Although some residents were present for both hearings, no one addressed the council with questions or concerns. The budget also induces line items for two police Tahoes, four pickup trucks, a new backhoe, a new lease for the landfill compactor at around $119,000, funding for the installation for the new water park the city was given, and a new service center shop. The remainder of the meeting entailed the council approving a request from the Chamber of Commerce to close East 13th Street between Stewart and East Monahans Parkway from 4:30 to 8 p.m. on December 6th for the lighted Christmas parade, and approving TML Intergovernmental Risk Pool Board of Trustees Election Place 11-14 and Texas Municipal League Region 4 Director Election. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in the story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The next City Council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, September 24th, in the Council Chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Enterprise files with Attorney General against Pecos Police Department in Ibarra shooting. The story was written by Smokey Briggs. The Pecos Enterprise made a formal complaint to the Texas Attorney General recently regarding the Pecos Police Department's continuing refusal to respond to public information requests concerning the November 26, 2023 incident at 1825 West Jackson Street that led to the shooting death of Adam Ibarra by Pecos police officers. The complaint was first filed with Randy Reynolds, district attorney for the 143rd Judicial District, but Reynolds advised the Enterprise in July that he had a conflict of interest that precluded his taking action on the complaint. After his refusal to act on the matter, the complaint was filed with the Attorney General. In public information requests made in December of 2023, the Enterprise requested a copy of the incident report and all information, physical or electronic, possessed and or created by the Pecos Police Department, including but not limited to body cam footage from responding officers, photographs, incident reports, witness statements, and related dispatch tapes. Prior to those requests, on November 27, Pecos Police Chief Lisa Tarango had issued a press release that only identified the address of an officer-involved shooting. The following day, she also released the name of the victim, Adam Ibarra, and told reporters that she could not divulge any other information as the case had been turned over to Texas Rangers. Department of Public Safety Public Information Officer Stephen Blanco stated at the time, quote, "These types of investigations are handled by the Texas Rangers, and DPS policy is we do not release any information until the investigation is complete and the case is presented to the grand jury," end quote. Blanco also told the Enterprise that the normal requirements of public information law did not pertain to the case because the suspect was dead, and so no arrest was made. After the Rangers concluded their investigation in February 2024, Tarango responded to the public information request stating, quote, "Attached is the report that is now available for release since the Texas Rangers have concluded and closed their investigation," end quote. However, the material provided by Tarango contained only reports of officers responding to the scene after the incident had occurred, not the officers involved, and very little else. In its complaint to the Attorney General, the Enterprise emphasized that, quote, "Despite the implication inherent in Tarango's statement that the report contains all responsive information, it clearly does not even include the most basic information, much less the other information responsive to the Enterprise's requests," end quote. The case took an odd turn when it was first presented to the Attorney General's office earlier in the year, when the AG ruled that because a Pecos police officer interviewed Ibarra's young son, then an exception regarding public information in cases regarding child abuse or neglect applied. Neither Pecos police nor the Enterprise had raised the possibility, but the AG's office latched onto it since a child was interviewed. However, there have never been any allegations of child abuse or neglect regarding this case, and according to Larson, he was mystified how the AG's office could come up with such a theory. The complaint filed by the Enterprise clears any misconceptions that the case ever involved allegations of child abuse. The complaint also points out plainly that while Texas's foundational public information law rests on the 1976 case Houston Chronicle Publishing Company versus the City of Houston, in which much of the language predicates an arrest as the triggering event for release of information, the so-called dead suspect loophole has been closed by the Texas legislature as of the end of the 2023 legislative session. The dead suspect loophole was a dodge around legitimate public information requests, perfectly illustrated by Sergeant Blanco's statement in this case that no arrest was made, so no information had to be released. While obviously a bad faith misreading of the law, law enforcement departments have managed to hide such records in the past using this exact ruse. However, House Bill 30, authored by Representative Joe Moody, a Democrat from El Paso, became law last year and requires the release of information when no arrests are made, but the suspect is killed, effectively closing the dead suspect loophole. Enterprise attorney Joseph Larson summed up the matter thusly, quote, "In this vein, the Texas legislature, after years of work by open government advocates and like-minded legislators, finally closed the so-called dead suspect loophole that allowed law enforcement agencies to continue to withhold information regarding cases even when the target of the law enforcement activity was deceased. The Pecos Enterprise requested information regarding the Ibarra case that, because the loophole has been closed, is now required to be released. However, the AG, who has long misused a statute that makes confidential all information from a child protective investigation to shield law enforcement from release of information to the public, is citing that statute now to allow Pecos Police Department to block the Pecos Enterprises request and to frustrate the intention of the Texas legislature. The Pecos Enterprise therefore filed a formal complaint and brief to require the AG to defend and hopefully to revise this clear misreading of the law and mandate that Pecos Police Department release this public information," end quote. Here is an obituary that appeared in the Monahan's News on Thursday, September 12th. Adrian Guerrero Michael Dominguez, age 38, of Monahan's, passed away on September 3rd in Killeen. Guerrero was born in Odessa to Ricky and Elma Dominguez on February 1st, 1986. Guerrero graduated from Monahan's High School in 2004. Guerrero is preceded in death by maternal grandparents Henry and Esmerita Sanchez, paternal grandparents Bonifacio Dominguez and Guillermo Hernandez, and uncles Hank Sanchez and Rogelio Dominguez. Guerrero is survived by his spouse, LeChardonnay Dominguez, children Gabriel, Isabella, Luis Jr., Angel, and Jackson, daughter Mariah Marquez, spouse Andy, and grandchildren Giovanni and Kalina Marquez, parents Ricky and Elma Dominguez, sister Crystal Dominguez, daughters Amaria, Ava, and Alexandra, brother Efren Dominguez, spouse Lily, and son Ace, and many aunts, uncles, cousins, and friends. Visitation for Guerrero was held Monday, September 9th at Harkey Funeral Home. Rosary followed at St. John the Apostle and Evangelist Catholic Church. Funeral Mass was held on Tuesday, September 10th at St. John the Apostle and Evangelist Catholic Church. Burial followed at Monahan's Memorial Cemetery. Visit our website, harkeyfunerals.com, to sign the guest book or leave a personal note to the family. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home.
Americans can help abused Christians abroad. Caraway Fitzpatrick say extent of worldwide persecution is appalling. By Bob Campbell. B. Campbell at OAOA.com. missionaries who have worked in foreign countries where the persecution of Christians is an everyday occurrence say it is a very vexatious problem, but Americans could be much more active to alleviate the suffering. Pastor Nicholas Caraway of Belmont Baptist Church and former Central Asian missionary Jared Fitzpatrick of Bartlesville, Oklahoma, say Americans are usually okay in such environments because the perpetrators have nothing to gain and potentially a lot to lose by killing them, but Native ministers and believers are often tortured and murdered with impunity. When Christians in the United States hear about the extent of persecution around the world, it's easy for them to be overwhelmed, said Caraway, who was a missionary in East Europe. The problem of persecution seems so large and is often happening so far away that it's difficult to imagine a way for American Christians to help at all. But the good news is that there are many ways for American Christians to take steps that will aid their brothers and sisters who are being pressured in other countries. He said a fundamental first step in getting involved is to learn as much as possible about the world and the places where the gospel is meeting resistance. Knowledge is power when it comes to responding to global persecution. Caraway said, the more an American learns about the world and persecution, the less countries like Nigeria, Mozambique, and Yemen seem impossibly remote. Ministries like the Voice of the Martyrs and Open Doors have incredible free resources to help educate Christians in the United States about global persecution hotspots. He said advocacy is another way that a believer in America can respond to Christian persecution in faraway countries. For example, it can be helpful for American Christians to write their congressmen about persecution, Caraway said. The United States is vastly powerful and capable of using its influence for good internationally. This is more likely if our representatives know that Christian persecution is an issue that lies heavily on the hearts of their constituents. Congressman August Pfluger, who represents the Permian Basin, recently said he would use his position as chairman of the U.S. House Subcommittee on Counterterrorism, Intelligence, and Law Enforcement to address the crisis. Caraway said an additional tangible way for American Christians to join in the sufferings of their persecuted brothers and sisters around the world is to give financially to reputable persecution response ministries. Fouch Norwood to Talk Books at Reagan by Ruth Campbell, rcampbell at oaoa.com. Local businessman and educator turned author Bill Fouch and illustrator Donnie Norwood will visit Reagan Elementary School Tuesday to talk to students about their books. I Am Just a Yellow Cat, I Am Just a Yellow Cat on a Road Trip, and their latest, Captain Green Cat Saves the World. I Am Just a Yellow Cat and I Am Just a Yellow Cat on a Road Trip can be purchased through philfouchauthor.com, and Captain Green Cat will be available from Amazon sometime in October. Book 1, I Am Just a Yellow Cat, is a story about a yellow cat that the focus is everyone and everything needs to love and be loved, and we all need to be needed, Fouch said. Book 2, I Am Just a Yellow Cat on a Road Trip, focuses on Southeast New Mexico, which is called the playground of West Texans, he added. Book 3, Captain Green Cat Saves the World, focuses on the difference between animals such as mammals and reptiles, amphibians, and how important copper is to the human body. My purpose with my books is to entertain and educate, Fouch said. In I Am Just a Yellow Cat on a Road Trip, the yellow cat goes on a road trip to see Fouch and his wife, Cindy. The book also includes Fouch's friends, Jim Blaine, and his late wife, Camilla. Fouch dedicated the Captain Green Cat book to Camilla. Fouch travels worldwide teaching people about corrosion control. He has taught a wide range of grades and is also a past president of the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees. Norwood is a former educator, IT professional, and board member with Ector County ISD. In the road trip book, Fouch said he wanted to highlight all the places where people from West Texas go and tell the readers something about them. He has a section on oil and cotton, Carlsbad Caverns, how it was formed, and the variety of bats found there, Smoky Bear, the Mescalero, Apache Reservation, White Sands, and many other locales. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for September 14, 2024. Thompson wants second term on council, by Kim Smith, OA News at OAOA.com. Odessa's District 2 Councilman Steve Thompson said that despite the fact that last 4 years have been highly controversial, he has some reasons to be proud and he's running again because he wants to see some other things through. There's so much work to be done and I've got the time, Thompson said. You know, this is home. I was born and raised here, and I make a good living here for my family, and this is just a way to give back. As contentious as a lot of it has been, there have been moments I've been very proud of, he said. Thompson said he is especially proud the city's water treatment plant is well on its way to being completely rehabilitated. In August 2021, he, Tom Sprawls, Detra White, Mary Willis, Mark Mata, and Denise Swenner outvoted Mayor Javier Hoven to approve the use of a certificates of obligation bond to pay for a $95 million major rehabilitation of the plant. Swenner and Mata and Hoven in June 2021 voted against the CO, saying they wanted the issue to go to voters. That year, the local GOP attempted to force a vote by Odessans on the matter, but didn't meet the required signature threshold. City administrators had said the 60-year-old plant was in dire need of repairs and upgrading and warned the system could fail at any time, potentially leaving thousands of Odessans without water. Oh, it's beautiful, Thompson said. It's getting real, real close. Thompson will face political newcomer Nayeli Urias in November for the District 2 seat. Thompson is also proud of the work he has done to get a $70 million sports complex built in Odessa. His good friend Larry Bell agreed to donate 100 acres of land worth $5 million to the project, and a memorandum of understanding was scheduled to be signed Friday afternoon. Once completed, the complex will be 140,000 square feet with 30 pickleball courts, 20 volleyball courts, 10 hardwood courts, a portable 200-meter banked completion competition track, fitness centers, conference rooms, offices, and concession area, a cafe, and retailer. In addition, outside there will be 12 fields for soccer, football, and lacrosse, and up to 8 football and lacrosse, and up to 8 softball and baseball fields. There are also plans for athletic training and physical therapy. After Sprawls, White, and Willis opted not to run for a re-election in 2021 and were replaced, Thompson often found himself on the losing side on several key votes. For example, he voted against the December 2021 firings of City Manager Michael Marrero and City Attorney Natasha Brooks. Those findings, Thompson said, directly led to a significant number of department heads retiring or leaving the city. It's because the finance department was decimated that the city lost its bond ratings with S&P and Moody's earlier this year, Thompson said. Still, the city has replaced many of the department heads with good people who are helping the city address serious issues such as broken down trash trucks and aging water valves and water lines, he said. Thompson said he didn't want to blame previous councils or administrators for any of the issues the city is currently facing, preferring to focus on the positives. The city is now steadily replacing the trash trucks, and City Manager John Beckmeyer has allocated $25 million to replace the water valves and water lines, he said. Beckmeyer said that $20 million of those funds were sitting in an account set up after Pioneer Natural Resources agreed to buy wastewater from the city. I think we're moving in the right direction. Finally, Thompson said. In addition, he, Beckmeyer, and Representative Brooks Landgraf have met with the Texas Water Development Board to see about obtaining state funds to assist the city, Thompson said. Thompson actually voted against hiring Beckmeyer to replace Marrero, but he said he's been pleasantly surprised by the job Beckmeyer has done. He said a recent article by Odessa Headlines publisher Jeff Russell accusing Beckmeyer of using city resources to further his own agenda was just a case of sour grapes. In fact, Thompson said the removal of Russell and Chris Crow from the Odessa Development Corporation was huge. They were a huge obstruction because they thought they knew more than what the law says, Thompson said. The two men were using their positions for their own political gain, he said. They lost sight of the fact they work at the pleasure of the city council, and that's what they found out. The city council had enough of it because they were saying, we can't do this, we can't do, and they made Mr. Bell do an industrial district, which never had to happen. They took it upon themselves to do that, Thompson said. As a result of their removal, Thompson said the city will be able to use sales tax revenue shared with the ODC to address some of the city's infrastructure needs. Moving forward, I'll be working on getting some of these dadgum roads done, Thompson said. That's my number one priority and one of the reasons I'm continuing to run for the city council. It's imperative that the city starts to be proactive when it comes to roads instead of reactionary because of growth, Thompson said. He wants to see UConn become a five-lane road, and road improvements need to be done near the future Bass Pro Shop.
This is the Dear Abby column. Some conversations can look more like an interrogation. Dear Abby, I appreciate you offering your booklet, How to Be Popular, to people who are uncomfortable or uncertain in social situations. I don't know if the following tips are included, but here's what I do. When I meet someone for the first time, I say, tell me three things about yourself that you would like to share. As I listen to the response, I think of the W words, who, what, when, where, and why. Then, for elaboration, I ask one of those questions, or perhaps more, a few minutes later. I hope these suggestions are helpful. Signed, Bob W. in North Carolina. Dear Bob, showing an interest in others is generally a good idea. However, some people might find your direct approach intimidating if it's a conversation starter with no preamble. Asking who, what, when, where, and why can be useful in conversation, as it also is when writing a news article. Making social conversation doesn't come naturally to everyone. Few individuals are adept at it because they are so focused on their own insecurities that it distracts them from reaching out. It can, however, be practiced and polished until it becomes second nature. My book, How to Be Popular, contains many useful tips for accomplishing this. It can be ordered by sending your name and address, plus a check or money order for $8 in U.S. funds, to Dear Abby Popularity Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054, 0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. It is meant for people of all ages and covers a variety of situations. The keys to being socially successful are be kind, be honest, be tactful. Offer a compliment if you think it is deserved. Be a good listener, and people will think you are a genius. It's true. And remember, a smile is an excellent icebreaker because it puts those around you at ease. Dear Abby, I am in my late 20s. My mom and dad will soon have been married for 30 years. I accidentally found evidence recently that mom is having an extramarital affair. When I confronted her, she said I should go to therapy to help deal with my overreaction to her, quote, doing something I don't like, unquote. She totally ignored the fact that it's not just a minor thing that I'm upset about, but something wrong, immoral, hurtful, and disrespectful to my dad, my brother, and me. Mom and I were very close, but this has ruined our relationship. I feel like she is putting reconciliation all on me, which feels unfair. What do I do? Signed, Throne in Maryland. Dear Throne, I am sure that what you discovered was a shock. However, you know nothing about the reasons your mother may be having an extramarital affair and whether your father knows about it. What's going on has nothing to do with you and your brother. Please take your mother's advice. Discuss this mess and your feelings about it with a licensed family therapist and you may gain some insight. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.